Hello and welcome to SciLax, the podcast where we talk about scientific developments and technological changes in Luxembourg, as usual, proudly powered by Research Luxembourg and recording in the RTL City Studios. Our guests today are Larry Kuschko, the startup program lead at ESRIC, the European Space Resources Innovation Center, and Marek Wilgucki, CEO of 4Point. Larry holds a master's degree in economics that he got in Belgium, and then master's degree in space systems from the University of Luxembourg, and another master in space resources from the Colorado School of Mines. He's been very busy, so I'm sure he'll tell us a lot about different things he's doing, of course, focusing especially on ESRIC. And then we have Marek. Marek holds a master of engineering degree from the Wrocław University of Science and Technology. Some people say Wrocław, in case you didn't recognize Wrocław, that's the Polish city. And he's here with us today because his company, 4Point, is actually the first startup incubated as part of the ESRIC Startup Support Program. Thank you very much for coming today, both of you.
Thank you very much for welcoming us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Our listeners, the podcast listeners, might remember that the beginning of the season was actually an interview with the director of ESRIC, so Catherine Hadler, and she explained everything about space resources. But it's one of those fields that goes very, very fast. So I'm pretty sure that half of the things she said is already outdated, or at least some of it, because it does change depending on what we manage to discover somewhere out there. So let's start with a very simple or actually tricky question as well. What are the current challenges and breakthroughs in space resources field? Larry, where are we right now?
Wow, there's so much to say. Thank you very much for that. Asking this question is really not an easy part. There are so many challenges, scientifically, technologically, and commercial-wise as well. I think that the one which is the most important for me is the commercial part. That's really the one, and I'm sure that Marek will have another point of view as well, but still the commercial part is very important. We've seen during the Space Resource Week what the CEO of ESA has mentioned as well. The commercial part, the commercialization of space resource is really a challenge right now. Again, the technology associated to the different projects going to the moon, we see that with the Artemis program, for example, it's a real challenge, but the real parts will be from the startup program and from the startups, simply saying, because they will be the future of the space resources market, because they are creating this market right now. There is no real customers as such. So their products will be really developed for a future market toward the lunar economy, and we can say toward the space economy.
Okay, what's your point of view, Marek, then?
I've got the same point of view as Larry is saying. This is really the biggest struggle for every company, I believe, that is dealing with the space in general. It's not limited only for the space resources. Because normally, how the startups and companies work here on Earth, they are dealing with the problems of their customers. Either it's problem solving, or it's generating additional revenue, or making something cheaper and save money for your end customer. And with the space in general, as there is no one on the moon to pay and no one that has any kind of problem, is very tricky to attract investors, to attract money. But on the other hand, from the technological point of view, investing in space for years already was giving us back a lot. Like the first thing is global positioning system. So let's try and go from Luxembourg to Wrocław without GPS right now with your car. And the space is giving back a lot, even though there is no one on the moon or on Mars, but I believe in the future will be, and we need to do those breakthroughs and push forward to make a better living here on Earth thanks to that.
And if I can complement what you are saying, it's a real challenge to have an existing activity. In fact, the startup support program is really looking for companies, for early stage companies, which have an existing market already. Might be terrestrial or space, like mining on Earth or potentially Earth observation if you have an activity in space, but having a revenue stream from an existing market to potentially back up this potential mid-term to longer-term horizon. And that's very important. And I think that 4Point, they really have these existing markets with terrestrial applications and remote sensing, which I can call space as well. Even that the space resources one is more longer-term, they have some activities to back up their future plans. And that's really the future of such projects. it's really an entrepreneurial spirit, approach, and way of managing a business. It's not just having one idea, one project. They have multiple projects, but one focuses on ISRU, in-situ resource utilization, space resources, for longer term. And that's really a big challenge for a lot of companies, having the capabilities to develop multiple activities at the same time.
Yeah, and this is also what I understood, at least for now, is that it's kind of like a sleeping activity, right? So you keep investing in whatever Earth applications you have, and you kind of align once in a while, right? But at the same time, you can't obviously go full swing and full speed at that, because as you said, customers are not yet theirs. But it also means that you're saving on customer research, you know, no focus groups. There's that part you don't need.
No, not really. For us, it's not like that. We are investing a lot into the space applications, because there is a tremendous amount of work to be done with that, and it cannot be really sleepy. It can be stealth, yes, but it cannot be slipping out there, and it cannot go like we are doing something for Earth, and so from time to time we'll think about space, because there is a lot of things that can kill you in space, and especially it can kill your technology. So from the beginning, you need to think about that. But it helps our terrestrial applications, because we are dealing with mining environment and mining industry. There is also a lot of things that can kill you in the mine and can break your technology. And those two areas of applying the technology are fairly close. They're not the same, but the issues and problems that mining industry is facing are close enough to utilize our research in the space application to put it to work for terrestrial application.
So before you tell me more about what you do, Larry, just, you know, you mentioned it a little bit already, the startup support program. So you're looking for startups that already have certain ideas of applications on Earth, and then you are giving the support so they can develop for the space economy and space resources in particular. Can you tell us a bit more about it? How does it work? How many cohorts? Where are we right now?
Right now, we are running 2 calls for application per year. We select different projects all around the world. It's not limited in terms of area. So it's split like the follow. So there are 2 phases, pre-incubation and phase 2, incubation 1. The pre-incubation phase, 5 candidates are selected from all around the world. They can stay in remote. They don't have to come in Luxembourg, because there is no funding during the first phase. The funding is through a methodology and approach that we have designed with the Technoport, which is our main partner in this startup support program. We are more than an incubation program. That's why we call it the startup support program. We really want to support the different projects. So through the 5 projects which are pre-incubated, they are already selected for us. So they are part of a panel, part of the portfolio. And during 3 months, we refine with them the approach, the concept. They move some things, they update their technical and business applications. And then one of them is selected for the second phase, which is really an incubation period in Luxembourg at the Technoport at Belval. So one of them is selected. It's not a winner, because all are winners. It's very important to mention, is the one that has the best business application.
Marek, did you hear? You're not a winner.
There are more. No, it's
not for the first time. So.
In the sense that they are continuing collaborating between all of them. And that's very important. The one which are selected is just that he goes to the second phase, which we think that we see better an approach how they can trigger the next step of the development. And that's very important. And that's where they received a funding going up to 200,000 euro. We are the first worldwide incubation program focused on space resources. Sometimes it's important to mention, that's why we want to mention, that we are not only an incubation program. We are the first worldwide startup support program focused on space resources. This is very important. And why I'm saying there is no a winner or a loser, in the sense that we want that when they are selected on different aspects and on different segments. So we want that they are part of the portfolio of ESRIC, but they continue to work together, developing other activities. Some are focused on prospecting activities, other have extraction technologies, other manufacturing, 3D printing, for example. Some have robotic, autonomous robotic systems, like, for example, 4Point. But we want that they all collaborate between them, that they consolidate their activities, and that they create and they foster this market, which is not really existing right now. The space resources as such is not an activity. It's a sum of different type of activities. And that's very important, that we can create this bunch of activities, a consolidated market that they can all contribute on their own. So the five which are pre-selected are already winners for us. We really consider that. Of course, one will get the funding. And again, we provide a non-dilutive funding in the sense that they remain the owner of their IP. So what they develop, it's for the market. It's not for us. And that's a very important point. And we are currently at the second cohort. We currently have a third call for application, which is open until the 30 June. But the first incubated project was 4Point. So now 4Point Space for the Space Resources project. And the second one, which is arriving right now, they come from Czech Republic. It's LightIGO Space.
And you will tell me more about LightIGO in a second, but we mentioned 4Point. So what is 4Point about?
Really tough question to answer, because I can talk about it for hours.
I will edit it, don't worry.
But I'm trying to perfect that for investors. So basically, we've got two applications, two products that we are working on. The first one is for the downstream services. And we are building an analytics platform for processing satellite data for mining industry. And this analytics platform supposedly is to deliver insights into the mining activities. So how the mining affects the environment, and also the recommendation engine, what they can do better, differently, to lessen the burden to our environment. It's a little bit connecting what Catherine Handler was saying in your previous episode, the one with Esrik, of course, that in the mining on the moon, we want to do things better. And right now, our first application is trying to do that on Earth. And taking this expertise, we can help industry with autonomous transportation. And the autonomous transportation systems is what we are doing here in Luxembourg with 4Point Space. So building up the driver support system for off-highway machines, and also developing the big space wheelbarrow for transporting regolith from point A to B, but not only the regolith, but other equipment across long distances and heavy equipment.
So we start with this analysis of satellite imagery, but I assume that that's not necessarily what you're going to be using in space. It's just kind of preparation and understanding how we can excavate so that we are more ESG, sustainable, whatever else you want to say.
It's not only that. It gives us this digital twin. Out of this bunch of information, you can generate digital twin. And thanks to that, the satellites are always there and taking pictures a lot, because we are utilizing Sentinel and PlanetScope and other satellite data providers. We can analyze the differences and changes in time every 3 days, every day, how the environment is behaving. So we can generate the digital twin, maybe not of each tree, but of the tree area connected to the mine. We can generate digital twin of the mine itself and see how the mine is changing and where the mine has problems with the bottleneck, problems with safety. And then we can say, hey, we've got autonomous solution that can help you with your bottlenecks, with your productivity. And in the same time, it can be better for the environment, because we'll have less of pollution and less impact generated there.
So, of course, we're talking about open pit mining, by the way, right? I mean, if it's satellite data, you can't see what is inside. Yeah, because you did not mention that before, but I think that's pretty important. Maybe obvious, but good to mention. And by the way, if you want to check on LinkedIn, Marek does publish a lot of beautiful pictures of different mines. I'm enjoying it, you know, from a lay person perspective, they're just really, really nice pictures to see.
Yeah, it's funny to say, for our own use in company, we've developed Mine Tinder. So we've got employees checking pictures of mines, and they're selecting the next mine that will be posted on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So it's the voting of our employees.
Maybe we should consider resource Tinder. Can be very interesting as well for Esrik. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes, exactly. We are getting, you know, ideas flowing here. Absolutely. For the community building. I think it's amazing. And you can see, I mean, that's probably why I like it, because if it's chosen by the employees, then, you know, there's definitely more appeal to some, in some extent. Okay. One of the things that I don't understand is that, okay, you have this, as you said, and then that, and that, and this. So there's a lot of directions. And I don't know whether this means that Esrik is kind of supporting you with all the directions, or you just mentioned some that is in the stage of development, or where are we going with the Esrik support program? Where is the core? Mm-hmm. Is there a core, or is just, or maybe those startups just have to have a lot of different fields in order to actually continue? Larry, what do you think?
We came together today for this podcast, and we had the chance to discuss about that. It was really the topic of our discussion. I think
I was not listening. I was not in the car. So yes, good.
Yeah. So thank you. Now we discussed with Marek, in fact, something very interesting, and which is really the objective of Esrik commercialization program. The startup support program is just one of the activity of the commercialization part of Esrik, but it's more than just providing funds or providing a single set of capabilities. When we provide a support to a startup which is selected for the second phase, we wish that they have different activities. First, to back up the R&D development of space resources, which is focused on the commercialization. But we are also providing different sets of activities within that program, in the sense that they are, in addition to just the funding, we want to work with the different startups, providing and sharing our technical capabilities in terms of research, because Esrik is not just commercialization. It's more than that. We are a research and innovation lab, part of the list, but our researchers, they can provide different support to the startups, especially to 4Point Space right now, in terms of prospecting, in terms of manufacturing, in terms of lunar composition and so on. So we provide technology support, business support. In addition, then ESA is providing also some technical and lab capabilities. So the idea is that when the startup develops, they have a proof of concept or an MVP, minimum viable product, they can come at Esrik or at ESA to test potentially their technologies. That's what we are doing. There is the fund, but we want that there is an exchange between that. But it's true that the selected startup, we want they have a certain, how can I say, administrative maturity. We want that they can operate, run a company. That's why one sometimes is selected more than another one. One can be better in terms of technology, but how do you operate a company? Operating a company, being a CEO, and Marek can confirm that, it's not an easy task on a daily basis, but you need to have this, I will use the wording of my colleague Olivier Zephyr from the Technoport, an administrative maturity to run a company in another country. And that's what exactly 4Point is doing. And we believed in them when they have been selected through a process, what we call a tender evaluation board, where different persons are present. So this complexity in terms of having an existing business, getting a fund, plus we provide them, Esrik provide researchers, Esrik research provide different support. It's really helping the incubated project to develop their activities in Luxembourg, on the Luxembourgish markets.
And it's great you mentioned that, because this is also something we discussed in one of the episodes. You know, this moment when you are a researcher and then you say, okay, that's it. Now I have my own spin-off, right? And we were discussing with Alberto Noronha, the CEO of NEOM, about that exactly, that, you know, there's so much you need to learn. And if you don't have a support program, I mean, still, there is a certain mindset that comes with being a researcher. And of course, there are those ones that are also amazing business people, but there's a lot that you need to learn, and you need to be really, as you said, mature to actually continue doing the business. And especially in this kind of a field where you have really the risk is high and the customers are unknown, you need to be very strong in that, I would assume.
And it's exactly that. It's not just the money or the funding that drives a project. It's also the maturity and the project itself. If you have a good project, the fund will follow. That means you have a project with an administrative maturity and so on. You can find budget will always be available, but sometimes you can have the funding, but not having a good project will not follow. But the other way, it's more complex. I cannot say it like this, but sometimes if you have a good project, a good team, having a good administrative maturity, we think that, at least I do think personally, that the project will follow somewhere.
That's a lot of compliment for you, Marek, I think.
From one side, maybe it's a compliment. It's a lot of to do, answering your question from the beginning and expanding what Larry said, why we've got so many things going on. I always like to compare running company, our company, to a symphony. At the beginning of most of symphonies, you'll have a cacatone of voices. All the voices and sounds will be playing from one side and another side. And eventually they will come up together to create something great and beautiful. We're trying to accomplish that in our company. And why we are doing a lot, we are still an early stage company, and the startup support program is targeting early stage. And you need to ideate, you need to test a lot of your ideas to see which are connected to the market, which are answering the problems that market, this one on Earth, but also the one in the future on the moon, will judge that they are useful and can build a big company. Maybe it's not only about the size of the company, and the companies that grew big enough are usually dealing with the problems of every day, and they are doing it really, really good. All our activities, we see them as building an ecosystem, connected ecosystem. Although they could seem like a lot, they are joined together because the satellite data processing and this digital twin helps our autonomous technology, because we are not dependent on the GPS. We are using the visual positioning system based on the partially satellite data, build up the maps, do some prospecting in front of the machines before they will come there and start either digging or drilling or transporting anything there, so saving their time and money. So now, connected with the startup support program and the ESRIC support program, the team at ESRIC is helping us to find a right way, the scientific way that will back up what we want to do, the problems that we identify, and find a solution for that.
Okay, the scientific way. Before we discuss that, as usual, as you know, always in the podcast, there's a moment when I'm asking my guest to ask a pub quiz question. So something that is related to their work, to some numbers, something relevant that maybe the listeners don't know the answers to. And I hope we haven't already talked about it, to what you prefer to. So listeners, remember, I will ask Marek and Larry to ask the questions, and the answer will be only at the end of the podcast. So we have to listen. Marek, can you please ask the question that you prefer?
I know that we are talking about space resources, but I've got the question for terrestrial resources. So do you know how many opencast mines are operating currently all over the globe?
I don't, and I will be very happy to know at the end of the podcast. So remember, the answer will be there. I don't know, Larry, if that gave you enough time to refine your question.
Yes, and that's how many time you think it takes for a startup for reaching an industrial partner in the field of space resources, okay, in average.
Good. I'm very curious to know that as well. There is some hard data, I hope, at least for some time. So we will discuss all the answers and these subjects at the end of the podcast, of course. But now I wanted to move on a little bit to the, let's say, research part. And of course, looking at Marek with that. First of all, you mentioned the open cast mines and how many there are. But, you know, when I think mines, I'm from a mining region myself, and I don't think innovation, I don't think mines are so much into sustainability and thinking about autonomous systems and all that. Am I wrong or not?
Partially, it's true. Partially, it's true that the market is changing. Right now, there is more and more companies that are looking into the sustainability, into autonomous technology. There are plenty of mines that already utilize autonomous machines, mainly in Australia. Because of that, they've got mines located very far away from big cities, and they are struggling with people to work there. But the autonomy in mining, it's not that new, but there is plenty of work to be done, and You can do much better there. And also for the sustainability, the European Union, US and all our countries are working really hard to make a hard time for mining industry and for them to start paying attention to the sustainability. So it's you can say top down approach, not from the bottom up, but for our application, we see from the junior mining companies that they are interested and they want to start using the tools that are helping them monitor their impact on the environment from the beginning, from the first shovel dig into the ground. So it's changing.
Okay, so what do you start with those companies? Do you start with this platform of analysis of the satellite imagery, or do you start with actually some autonomous solutions for them?
It's an analytics platform, because before they will dig into the ground, they're building up what they're planning to do and if it goes accordingly to the plans, and they can monitor how they are progressing, if it's according to plans or if it's behind the plan or somewhere else.
From the scientific and the research perspective, analytics platform, okay, I'm pretty sure you can't tell me much more, but just out of curiosity, how do you analyze such image? What is behind there? What do you apply? What's the programming language? I don't know. How much can you tell us, actually?
I believe I can tell quite a lot, because we are opening a Pandora box here. First of all, we should start from the satellite data and types of data that we've got. So most of the people will recognize those nice pictures that we have in Google Maps that you can see around your neighborhood or the new city that you can see. But there is more to the satellite data than the optical data. You can have multispectral data provided, for example, from Sentinel constellation, European constellation, which gives a lot to research. And the Copernicus program is really the best thing that happened to the space and satellites. And the multispectral data, they've got somewhere between 8 to 15, 20, 21 layers of narrow bands. So the satellites are observing the light reflected from the Earth and capturing that onto their sensors and looking only for the this narrow band. And out of this narrow bands, you can do analysis, for example, how much water you've got in plants, how healthy are plants, if you've got enough of chlorophyll in them, if the leaves are green or not. So there is plenty of things you can do with the multispectral. Then you've got radar data, and the radar data is really, really good in the times when you've got clouds on top of some area you're looking, because the radar will penetrate the clouds, and you can analyze land subsidence. You can detect objects from that. You can detect flooding, for example, and the extent of water on some areas. And you will have hyperspectral data, the newest type of data. With multispectral, we had up to 25-30 sensors, and with a hyperspectral, we've got something between 200 to 250. So we can analyze really precisely this data and have the spectral response and detect minerals, detect land contamination, or detect the gases emitted like CO2 or methane. So there is plenty of things. And then you're analyzing the data, but at least for our end customers, data, it's not that important. It's cool to hear about that. But at the end of the day, you need to make some kind of report, and our platform is doing that for them. So switching from data analytics to analyzing insights and helping the end customer with writing the report with our own large language model that is generating those reports. So
you have data for terrestrial miners, but maybe you will have data for Luna miners tomorrow, right?
We would like to do that.
Yeah, that's great. And that's what I wanted to add. In fact, last week, I was at the Space Resource Roundtable in Colorado, at the Colorado School of Mines, and a certain community of terrestrial miners was present there. And it's true that they are starting to be very interested about those lunar mining activities, space mining, as it was often called. And it started to be a real important activity for them. It's just spreading their activities. What they're doing on Earth, they might do it in space. Because at the end, Earth is just a body in space. It's a celestial body. It's just that we have different constraints. You have such atmospheric constraints on Earth, but you can do the same activities on another celestial body, more or less. The moon, for example, right now, Mars tomorrow. Okay, it's not really tomorrow, but in the future, in an early future, I hope so. And that's very important because those miners, they might have the technology, the way of doing and developing certain activities on another celestial body. Of course, dealing with local constraints, lunar or Martian constraints. I'm not going to talk about that. I think they're just waiting a legal framework for operating that. It's not so easy going operates, which surface you operate, what you own. But I'm sure that having those data first about the location and so on will be a first step. Something for you, I'm sending just a message maybe, because this is a first step, knowing where you go. Those prospecting activities are very important for a lot of industries. We will not send anything on the moon if we don't know where we go. And I think that's, if you have such knowledge about the locations, knowledge how to have autonomous systems, if you can replicate this business, transfer this business on another celestial body here, for lunar activities can be a next step for 4Point as well. That's why 4Point Space, I guess.
I really like what you've saying and it coming back to the symphony, because it's like instruments playing in the back and they are taking up the volume to go to the front. And I hope that this analytics for Moon and for Mars will eventually come into front also.
But I'm also thinking a lot of challenges. I'm sorry, you're very positive, but you know, we still can't figure out whether there is enough oxygen in the places we thought we would have oxygen. What about the ice on the moon? Do we have the ice? How much ice there is? What can we get there? You know, we're just talking small spots, and here is the whole analysis of the whole surface of a celestial body. So that's probably not next year, right?
No, for sure. I think that's the different startups, even the real public, I would say, like all space agencies are planning missions on 10, 20, 30 years. I think it's not easy going first in space, then landing on the surface of the moon. It's another challenge. Prospecting activities, power. It's really a real constraint being on the moon. I mean, I will not talk on technical details regarding that, but still there are some challenges for terrestrial players where they can use their technologies in space, but there are also globally prospecting challenges to know where we go on the moon, which crater, what's the component of the different craters. That's a real challenge. And I think we need some technology like what 4Point is proposing here. I think it's very important on the long term.
I believe the first piece of equipment that will be commercially available around the moon will be satellites providing this information for analytics, for the mission planning, for the mission support. And I know that there are a few companies that are already sending satellites into the orbit of Earth, but they are thinking about sending satellites also into the orbit of the moon to do exactly this, to find the ice, to find the minerals, and also support landing activities and mission planning.
When it comes to analyzing the data satellites are collecting, do you need to use HPCs to do that? Or like you can have a computer and analyze, like how much power do you need? How much computing power?
A lot.
Yeah, I would assume so.
A lot of computing power, and we are utilizing cloud platform.
Okay.
That, so.
I just wanted to mention there is a great HPC in Luxembourg as well called Meluxina, but probably it will not be enough for some things. I was just wondering also, because I've never checked it, when a satellite is gathering imagery, is it stored? Is it like, I don't know, also after 48 hours, like surveillance systems that get deleted? What happens with it? Or it's just we plan it, okay, I want this image in 2 days and I'm going to get it and then nobody else has access to it. What happens with all this data?
So you are touching a few problems here. First of all, most of the satellites will have constant communication. So they'll do a picture and send a frame with data back to Earth directly. But for example, for optical satellites, it's a problem with the bandwidth because they're sending a lot of data that is not useful because they're capturing clouds and you don't need to have clouds. And there are companies that are providing artificial intelligence and machine learning algorithms for the satellites themselves to not send those pictures with clouds. So that's one thing. Another thing is getting that and storing. So the storage is on the satellite data provider side, and it's usually the satellite owner is storing these pictures. And you can task some satellites, not all of them, to do your work, to take your pictures, and if you select the time, and there will be a good environment, so no clouds in the area, they will take your picture and send it to you, but still the owner of satellite will keep it copy.
And it's stored somewhere in the cloud as well, or where?
Usually, yes.
A lot of cloud discussion, yeah. You know. Clouds are, seem to be important in many different ways, for sure. We discussed a lot 4 points. I'm sure we would, as you said, talk for another 3 or 4 hours to actually understand the wheelbarrow you mentioned, everything else. But I also wanted to ask Larry to mention the other startup that is not represented here today, although there is a spot he could. The other Marek could sit here, but
exactly.
Yes, next time, it's good planning for the next episode of the podcast. So what is the startup about and what are they going to amaze us with soon?
In fact, the other startup was from Czech Republic, so it's Lightigo Space. And it's fun because it's also named Marek and Pavel, and there is no link between both, just to be clear. But they have a great project using spectroscopy, and I think that the technology will be also revolutionary for the different space resources segment. I think what we have seen at ESRIC, it's also a combination and a potential collaboration in the long term between Lightigo Space and 4Point. We want that all those bunch of startups that we have, that will have in the coming years, they consolidate the space resources value chain, because from prospecting activities to excavating, extracting, beneficiating up to the manufacturing, that they create one single bundle of activities. We don't want them to have in the beginning in the competition, even if I think that competition is good in that business. It's very good because competition helps differentiate yourself and improve and innovate. Okay, that's maybe an economist point of view, but sometimes having those competing each other can be good for the future. But what we see here, it's really a combination and support between them, that they go as a single unique entity and that they share some technology, some experiences, and they work together. And if I'm not mistaken, that in the future, we hope to see more collaboration, even in an early future, collaboration with those startups. We really want them to go as a single person, single unit toward the moon. I think that's our objective at the end, that they most try to consolidate in one single entity.
I would like to add one thing and then another thing to what Larry said. It brings us to the beginning of our conversation. Although we were selected from our first cohort, we are still working with companies that were in the cohort with us. So yes, it's true, we get financing, but we didn't break a bonds that were made thanks to the program. And that's really great. And this is the biggest value, at least for us, that the ESRIC Startup Support Program gives, is the network and the possibility to work with like-minded people. A second thing I would like to add to this approach of the startups having terrestrial application. From the one side, it's the risking scenario. From another side, I believe it was 2007, 2008, there was a bubble where a lot of space startups just crashed because they didn't had this sustainability. This is really important for those that would like to start a company. Once you are not alone in the company and you're starting to employ people, you're responsible for those people. And it's a journey, it's fun. But still, those people will like to get a wage, they'll pay their bills, they'll sustain their families. And it's not only about running a business in space or running a business on Earth. It's about running sustainable business that can support everyone that is in company that wants to work with you, because they're trusting the company and they trusting management team that they will lead the company in the direction that it's benefiting and they can grow with the company. So that's a really important thing. It's not fun. It's fun from one side, but there is a tremendous responsibility. Right now, in our company, we've got 45 people. So it's 45 people for 45 families that are waiting each month for payment.
Another rocket launch, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And if I can add, this is true, discussing with our main business and technology incubator we are working with for the startup support program, being the Technoports, which I thanks because we are learning a lot with the collaboration we are doing with them. That's what they are looking for. That's why they want to, they risk the existing business. That's why we don't want to fund or support an activity that only has one market, being the space resources one. We like to support activities that already have a de-risking model in the sense that they have a terrestrial or existing space applications, because the idea is not to fund an R&D project. The ESRIC Startup Support Program is financing a commercial project in the sense that we expect that there is already something to de-risk the business, because at the end, putting all your eggs in the same buckets, it doesn't work, and it's not an easy way to go towards space, because space resources, it's very complicated. And the market is not yet developed. It's in a very, very early stage. And that's why I'm saying that for all potential applicants, I mean, discussing with both Mareks, I should say right now, because from Lightigo and from 4Point, it's very important to understand that where is the market trending? They need to have terrestrial applications to de-risk the existing business, so to be able to generate and having a sustainable form of business activities, and then having a view, a way of going to space resources. That's really a real challenge for such activities. And sometimes I don't know how we are doing. It's a real challenge on a daily basis, I guess.
So again, connecting to the previous words that Larry said about getting funding, that good projects and good ideas and good teams will get funding. It's true, but the funding, it's not always on time. So this is the struggle that everyone should know about that would like to start their own startups. So.
And it also leads us to the fact that even now, after so many years, one of the first questions you get from a layperson, if you are in the field, is like, why do you do this, right? Because of course, we are still Earth-centric. And if we're not in the space economy, even yesterday at the tech day, at the least tech day, actually, I think the first question that Catherine Hadler, the director of ESRIC, got was exactly like, why bother with space resources? And then the second question is like, yeah, so we bring them back. Right? It's nothing about Israel, anything that is just like, yeah, we go there because we want it here, right? So the discussion is always ongoing and always there. And you have to prove your points as well, for sure, many, many times. I can see you're smiling.
Correct.
I think it's not necessary to bring resources back. It's how you expand activities or how you extend activities. I don't think that 4Point will bring anything back from the moon, but having a presence to having sustained activities on the surface of the moon, I think the future, we can turn in different ways. I mean, this discussion can be a never-ending story at the end, but I think the idea, there were a lot of things saying in the media, in the press, we'll bring resources back because we need it. And so, no, the idea is to extend and expand activities, develop activities on the surface of the moon for lunar economy, not for bringing them necessarily back to Earth. There are a lot of projects we will bring back, an asteroid, doing mining of diamonds and things like that. I think economically speaking, just bringing back will decrease the price of the diamonds if you bring it back. I'm not sure that diamond makers on Earth will be very happy about that. But that's another story. It's economics point of view. I think that it's important to mix economy, science in behind that. Because only matching science, it doesn't work. Only matching economy, you need to create a mix, a new economy. That's what space resources is made for. It's a lot of activities, engineering, physics, chemistry, business, because there is a space business behind that. You don't go there for fun. True fun is an important part of the game. And I think that all the startups we have seen, they're happy of doing that. And that's very important, being happy of what you're doing. It's a cool job. I think we can ask to Marek every day. He's happy of what he's doing, I guess. Maybe not every day, but it's a cool job. And it's great to know also the constraints. There is an economical constraint. You need to get money. You need to get revenue. You cannot rely on revenue from R&D support. You need to start generating a business, a real commercial activity. And commercial activities can be very diverse. That's why we want the startups having a terrestrial activity. Because defining a real business development case for a lunar economy or space economy more globally, it's very hard. That's why we prefer that they have this de-risking business by generating a revenue on Earth or space, like Earth observation, rather than just foreseeing a project on the moon, because it's a very long-term project. And in terms of revenue generation, I think that all those startups, projects which are developing, they should start considering how they will generate a revenue from the private sector and not only from a subsidy from the European Space Agency, from NASA and so on, how they will sustain their activities without anyone. So you need a customer, you need to develop something, you need a customer, and that's why the space resources value chain is important. In all the steps, you have a customer somewhere. I think that if Marek is going to the moon, it's not for nothing. It's for generating other revenue. And that's really the challenge of this space economy, and more precisely, space resources economy.
And I think we could go on. I can see Marek wants to add something more.
I believe it all sums up to a very evangelic connection there, because we are talking about big things. And you need to prove that you are good in the smaller things to make sure that you are good with the bigger ones.
The smaller things are also the pub quiz questions. So I think this is the moment we have to go back to the questions you asked. So if you can remind our listeners what the questions were, and I think we're going to start with Larry because he pushed away his responsibility before. So if you can remind us the question and then tell us what the answer is.
Yes, it's how many time it takes really to find a partner really in this space industry and space resource industry world.
And the answer is?
It's around 3 to 4 years.
That's long.
Because it takes time in the space resources part. It's based right now not on a real econometric, I would say, data collection, but based on different interviews we collected. And it takes some time because they need to know you. They need to be sure that it's a de-risking model. And of course, partnering takes the time to develop the technology, proving that you are doing something. So it takes between 3 to 4 years. And it's a long time. It's a long time period. How a startup can survive with public funding during 4 years? And this is a paradigm where you start shifting from public funding to private funding. And that's a real challenge because I know maybe Mark will not appreciate that a lot, but you cannot rely only on public money. At some times you need to find partners in the industry. And that's a real challenge. It is a real challenge. You need to constantly show that your technology, it's updated because you have every time new players. And the time you develop something, maybe you have a new technology. He's running every day. I guess so. That's for sure. Yes, you confirm. And being sure that you match what you need, it's a real challenge and not an easy task. So you need this public funding in at a certain time. But it's a paradigm at the same time. It's where you stop relying on public funding and be an independent entity moving on your own funding or private funding. And that's a real challenge, I guess.
That's correct.
For
I
sure.
I totally agree. Yeah.
What about the challenge of the open pit mines? So how many do we have them? That was the question. I can already ask it instead of you, right? The question was all over the world, how many open pit mines there are?
Over 500,000 open pit mines, and larger than 25 square kilometers is more than 100,000.
That's really a lot.
And we are opening more every year. And closing some of them, but not that much as we are opening.
Great playground for
yes,
4
exactly.
Points.
Good exactly. Client base. Yes, talking of that.
For your
right?
Terrestrial activities, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So if you're interested in open pit mining, in space resources, anything else we discussed today, you know, just check out 4Point Space, 4Point as such as well, Marek, Larry, contact them if you have any questions, any comments. And what remains is just to thank you very much for coming today and sharing all this interesting research and economic part as well of what is happening in Luxembourg and abroad.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming us.
And this is it for today. As usual, listeners, don't forget to subscribe, to follow us, to check out what we're writing on LinkedIn, Instagram, what we're posting on Twitter, as usual as well. If you have any questions, comments, contact us, suggest guests. We're always open to new ideas. And this was Silex, and my name is Hanna Siemaszko.